Sometimes we say that prayer, maybe we've grown up in the church and we're just familiar with it, and we lose sight of some of the words that we're saying. 2 years ago, I was visiting in a Presbyterian church, and when we get to the place, "Forgive us our trespasses," they actually use the word debt. And it was the first time there that my mouth kind of stumbled and I kind of stopped. And I listened to it again, like, "Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." In the Lord's Prayer, this is the only action that is commanded for us to do. Everything else is about who God is and God's provision, about God's kingdom being founded and asking him to be revealed on the earth. The only thing that asks us to do something is this line, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." That's challenging. That can be very challenging. When I was in my teens, I read I'm 95% sure that I read it in Catherine Marshall's books, Christie. But if you are like, can quote Christie and tell me, no, it's not in Christie, I apologize. I think it's in this book called Christie by Catherine Marshall, and it's in the library. One of the characters, for those who don't know, it's a novel Catherine Marshall wrote loosely based on the life of her own mother, who went to the Blue Smoky Mountains. Yeah, we think so. But she works up with this group of people who are uneducated. Rednecks might be a term we might use. There's feuds on these mountains. And one of the characters is like this patriarchal, grandfatherly figure who's gruff and tough. And he says the Lord's Prayer every night, except for that line. "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." Because if God only knew what that family on that side of the mountain did, he wouldn't ask me to forgive them. So he just cut it out of his prayer. Forgiveness is hard. Forgiveness is so hard. It is not my default setting, and maybe it's not yours either. It doesn't come naturally. I don't actually have a memory of either of my parents doing this, but I have a memory of it happening where I'd be playing with some friends, and one of us would be on the side of the right and the go to the parent, and the other, or the adult, maybe playing at friends' houses, and the adult would be like, "What do you say?" And the one looking at, "I'm sorry." And they're not really sorry. They just got caught, and this is what is being demanded of them. And then if you're on the receiving end of that story, they're like, "And now what do you say?" And you're like, "I forgive you." And you are not in a place of forgiveness at that moment. Oh, no, you are not. You are going, "But they cut the hair of my doll, and I want to punch them in the face." I mean, I would never think that. Forgiveness is not my default setting. Forgiveness is not our natural human default setting. There's a lot of other ways that we can deal with wrongs, with hurts. I've got a number of rocks up here on the stage. I borrowed them out of my mother's garden this morning. I have strict instructions to make sure they all go back. I've also been asked if I was just going to throw them at people. I'm like, no, unless you heckle me. No, I promise, also, there was the suggestion of, are you just giving them out to the fathers to say, "You guys rock"? And yes, you do, but I have to return the rocks to my mom's garden. So again, dads, grandfathers, men who have just been fathers in other people's, we're glad you're here. Happy Father's Day. You do rock, but I can't give you one of the rocks. They have to go back to the garden, or I will be needing to ask for forgiveness. Okay, we have some rocks up here. And each of these rocks represent wrongs that can happen in our lives. Wrongs from little things to, I don't know, a joke that you only think you thought was funny, but the other person is now ticked off at. And there's lots of things we can do. I'm going to put mine in my bag. Just, you know, I hold on to it, put it in here. Or maybe you work with teenagers or have a teenager or a child and they roll their eyes at you. And one time's not a big deal. But when is the second, third, fifth, tenth time? Or they're snarky in a sermon? One or two offenses, maybe you're just holding a little rock. But over a repeated time, something that's small starts becoming heavy as we carry it. Or your best friend lies to you. Or you've told them something that you never wanted told to everyone else, and they shared it. Even if they were doing it to help you, betrayal, it hurts. Or then we get into some big things. Some of those harder to explain things. Sometimes maybe it was pain and sin that's happened over a lifetime. Can't trust that person anymore. And it just, they start building up. What do we do with these things? They lied to me again. They cheated on me. It starts weighing us down. How do we deal with the hurts in our lives? How are we going to just forgive trespasses? I mean, this is getting heavy. Some of us simmer with it. We hold on to it. We just let it close to us. And I'm sorry if I'm hitting my mic. I'm going to put it on this side. And we pull it out and go, oh yeah, let me tell you what they did to me. You have to hear the whole story. It started 4 years ago when we went into a business agreement together. And they cheated me. It simmers underneath, and it creates a toxin on us. We've heard that saying, time heals all wounds. No, yes, we have heard that. No, we haven't. And there's an amount of truth to that if the wound was already cleaned. But if we're just letting it fester and simmer below the surface, it can grow bigger and heavier over time. Because the surface looks well, but we're in denial. And it's just under there, leaching off this toxic hate in us, simmering, replaying it, goes in the bag. Make my load, I'm gonna break this backpack before the end of today. So we live in denial sometimes. Yeah, you told me you were showing up to help me move, but you didn't. It's fine. It's fine. You were going to be there to help me babysit. It's fine. No, it's okay. You weren't able to help in this way. It's fine. You called me a name, but you know what? It's okay. The Christ-like thing to do is forgive and to forget. So whatever, it's okay. So sometimes we let it simmer and get heavy. Sometimes we just live in denial that it's even a problem. Still, it's under the surface. The top looks okay. But it is festering. Sometimes we allow it to make us grow bitter. Really bitter. In 2000-ish, our family was in a church, and there was a good, lovely Christian lady who really wanted to do good, lovely things for God. And sometimes in her eagerness, she forgot that people were involved in Christian living. And she did something, and it hurt me. But it didn't actually, her actions didn't affect me. They were directed at my mom who's right there. And I love my mom very much, and I very much started hating this woman. Not nice thoughts were, spiteful Liz can be very spiteful. Spiteful Liz can be very mean. And I was in Bible college, and I knew I needed to forgive her. And I just kind of, time passed. We were no longer in Christian fellowship in that congregation. Life changed. I didn't need to deal with it. I didn't see her anymore. Until I was a pastor at a different church. And her family started attending our church. I thought it was good. I mean, everything was good. It was simmering. It was deep. To the point that my senior pastors, my boss, my spiritual advisor at the time, Scott Prime, sat down with me. He's like, Liz, don't know if you're aware, but there is some tension on your side about this person. I'm like, yeah, let me tell you what they did. And I think I, like, you know the statement, if looks could kill? Well, if words could kill, if she had been in the room, she would have been like, ashen cinder. Like, I was not a nice person at that moment. I was angry. He's like, Liz, you need to deal with that. To be very honest, Liz, you are carrying something heavy. And so I took this pain and hurt, and what I was essentially doing, oh my goodness, this is going to be, ugh. There. I put this heavy load on my back. And even though, like, denial might make me feel like everything's good, or just growing bitter can make me feel like I've dealt with it, my hands are free, bitterness is something else. I become controlling, maybe not even in that relationship, but in order to protect myself from all other hurts, it's my way or the highway. Let me tell you how this is going to be. I put parameters and walls up in my new relationships so that I can't be hurt in the past, so that I can't get frustrated, that you can't change things. And in my controllingness, I end up hurting other people, because hurt people with heavy baggage hurts people. We can let it simmer, we can live in denial, we can grow bitter, or we can seek revenge. Maybe not outright slashing tires or murder, but we just replay that bad thing happening to them. That hope for karmic justice, because karma's not a nice person. Right? Some of us do that. And our bag gets heavy. Very heavy. Last summer, if you are into movie blockbusters and the Marvel Extended Universe, you might have seen a small movie called Captain America: Civil War. Two of you did. Great. Now, I can make some merits after the service. Did the movie line up with the story comic arc? And we're not going to have that discussion here. On the surface, this movie was about should superheroes reveal their identity or not, and the ramifications. But in the movie, unique to the comic, the heart of what motivated everything was of a revenge plot. In an earlier Marvel movie, a city was destroyed. And when this one city was destroyed, a man lost his family. And he knew, just being a mortal human, he couldn't go up against superheroes. So he decided if he could get the superheroes to hate and fight each other, they would just destroy themselves. In that, this one character loses his father. He is out on revenge to kill the man who killed his dad. He becomes a superhero. It's awesome. You should just watch Civil War this afternoon. It's on Netflix. But revenge is what's consuming everyone. This is the point. Revenge is what's consuming everyone. And this is where Black Panther, the man who's lost his father, who spent most of the movie trying to kill and get revenge on the person who killed his dad, comes to a realization. So we're going to watch a clip.
I almost killed the wrong man.
Hardly an innocent one.
This is all you wanted? To see them rip each other apart?
My father lived outside the city. I thought we would be safe there. My son was excited. He could see the Iron Man from the car window. I told my wife, don't worry. They're fighting in the city. We're miles from harm. And the dust cleared. And the screaming stopped. It took me 2 days until I found their bodies. And my father, still holding my wife and son in his arms. And the Avengers, they went home. I knew I couldn't kill them. More powerful men than me have tried. But if I could get them to kill each other, I'm sorry about your father. He seemed a good man, with a dutiful son.
Vengeance has consumed you. is consuming them. I'm done letting it consume me. Justice will come soon enough.
Tell that to the dead.
The living are not done with you yet.
Okay. Vengeance has consumed everyone. That man, the Avengers. But Black Panther makes a choice not to let it consume him anymore. My back is starting to hurt. I don't know the weight of the things you're holding on to, emotionally or spiritually, how it's affecting you. Over the last 5-10 years, I'm hearing more and more studies, not theologian studies, but actual doctors coming out with the reality that when we hold on to bitterness, when we hold on to anger and unforgiveness, it actually is starting to cause physical damage to our bodies. It's like God had something going on when he says, forgive. Because it's not necessarily about the other person. It's about what God wants to do and the freedom he wants to give us. Forgiveness is not my natural default. But there's such a relief when I finally can just say, it's done. I forgive. I know it's important. Oh, that feels 100 times better. But how do I get to the place of that freedom? How do I forgive when they've done to me? How do I forgive when they've done that to me? I think our answer is in the example of God himself. God who loves us. Jesus told a lot of stories about who God was and revealed his nature to us. One of the probably the most famous is the story of this kid. We call it the story of the prodigal son. It's got a couple other names, the story of two brothers, the story of the lost son. But really, I believe this should be the story of the extravagant love and generosity of a father and his two sons with issues. Oh, yes, because they both have issues. Okay, we might just shorten that down. This is the story of a loving father. This is the parable of the loving father. And as a side note, this is not a story with parenting advice in it. This is not how to raise your children, and I will point out two reasons why. These are grown adult children. And second, Jesus is reflecting God's extravagant grace, not giving parenting advice. God's extravagant grace, not showing the need for tough love sometimes. It's different. This was not a parable about parenting. This is a parable of who God is and how he loves and extends grace. So as I'm doing this, I learned the word prodigal. There are times where you've grown up in church and you've heard words all your life, and then you go, I have no idea what that means. I asked one of my friends today, do you know what prodigal means? And they're like, never heard the word before. I'm like, I learned what it meant today. So, for those who have never known what prodigal meant, it means wasteful extravagance. Wastefully extravagant. That's the son. And he is a caricature of the worst type of sin that could have happened in a Jewish family. In a middle class family, even today, but in Jesus' time, family was the center of life. Family was where you found purpose and morality. It was where you found connection and hope and everything good centered in the family. And the father was the center of that. And this kid, younger brother, essentially goes up to his dad and commits emotional patricide. I wish you were dead, give me my inheritance now. Cutting himself off completely from the family. And the dad does not give him a swift slap to the side of the head. He says, okay, here's your inheritance. And the son leaves, and he wastes it all. It's like a trip to Vegas, and he blows it all. You can read the full account of what happens in Luke 15, 11, verse 11 to verse 32. I'm giving you a summary. Well, he's there. He has a revelation. He does not actually go, you know what? I really hurt my dad. He gets to a place where he's in such dire needs. He's eating. He gets a job as a servant or a slave feeding pigs. And he has no food, so he starts eating the pigs' food. And he's going, this is not great circumstances. At least the servants in my dad's house eat better than this. Maybe I can go home and be a servant. So he gets up, and when he's a long way from home, his dad, a respectable Middle Eastern man, does something respectable Middle Eastern men do not do. He runs. He runs and embraces his son. And his son has this prepared monologue of, I've sinned against you and God, and please make me be a servant. Does not even assume he'll get a place back in the family. Well, his dad's saying, I love you. Son, come, let us celebrate your return. He puts a ring. He is included in the family unit again. Extravagant grace and love surrounds this kid. The older brother comes home, hears that their celebration, and gets his grumpy pants on and goes outside the house and goes, I'm not going in there. Do you know what he did? The father, in an equally gracious act, comes out to his son, who's being all sulky and salty and rude, and says, come into the house. Come in and celebrate. We have reasons for victory, for joy. Your brother who was lost is found. The dad extends the same love to his older son, who chooses to stay outside the party, unforgiving, going, I did everything you've ever wanted from me. Why does he get the party? And that's where the story kind of ends. Some things I never noticed about the story before today was, who was Jesus talking to? Have you ever asked that question about this parable? Who was Jesus talking to? He was in the middle of a party with some friends, people that he was loving to God. He was with the sinners and the tax collectors, those people. And some religious hoity-toities, religious leaders, started challenging and questioning him on what his practice was. They haven't repented. They have not gone through the right ceremonies. They are still sinners. Why are you hanging out with them, Jesus? And that's when he tells a story. This is about two brothers with issues. One who is out for himself and is still very selfish. And one who is not realizing how much he needs grace and love. Who's willingly standing outside even after he's been invited in. Both of them, the slightest hint from the father, slightest turn in the father's direction, he is willing to lavish extravagantly love on them and forgiveness and grace. That's the God we serve. That's the God who forgave me. There's been something going around the internet lately. It's called the Gospel in Chairs. There's about six different versions you can watch online. It originally started by a Greek Orthodox priest who is trying to explain just some of the subtle variations between Greek Orthodox theology and the gospel message, how they perceive it, and the way Protestants have often perceived it. And I've watched a number of them. Some of them, you can see a little bit of snark against different sides of the... But in listening to it, it helped me see something I often forget when we talk about the gospel. So I'm doing not the full Gospel in Chairs, but I'm doing a little summary of it. So we have a chair, and we have another chair. And the full one of the full videos we're going to be putting on Facebook later this week. So if you want to actually see a bigger clip of this, Susie and I are going to rock it out on Facebook. And by me and Susie, I mean Susie's just going to rock it out on Facebook. In the beginning, so how this works is we tell the gospel one way that highlights some elements of who God is and the way we express God, and it's true. And then we say it again showing a different element of the story that sometimes gets overlooked. So, in the beginning, God created. He created in his image. So we have God, and we have the people he created. And God and the people created in his image were in perfect union. But God knew that for us to have a loving relationship, because God is love, and he was in perfect union before people were ever created, because there was the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit from the very beginning, he knew that people needed a choice. And in our rebellion, we made a choice against God. And we know that sin separates us from God, which is why God sent Jesus. And Jesus came as a man and lived, but ultimately he came and died in our place to take the wrath and the punishment of sin, so that when we choose Jesus, we can be in right relationship with God again. If you've grown up in the church or if you've heard that message, that's how we often communicate it. Okay, good. I've had enough nods to me. We're going to tell the same story, but some slightly different focus or added focus. In the beginning, God created. He created in his image people to be his image bearers because he loves relationship and wanted to share that. And knowing that we needed the free will, he gave it to us. And humans chose to reject God. So God sought us out in the garden and said, "What's going on?" And had a conversation. And we lied. And we left. And we came to Cain and Abel. And Cain kills. And God goes and he finds Cain. And he says, "I'm going to protect you from those seeking vengeance against you." But the story continues. We turn our back on God. And I'm violently throwing things and chairs are breaking. And God comes and says, "I will be your God and you will be my people." And we reject God. And God says, "Okay, I'm going to give you a set of laws, a way that you can be in relationship with me." And we reject God. And God says, "I forgive you. I'm going to send you judges to help you in this journey of being in relationship with me." And they say, "No." And God says, "I will send you prophets, and they will help turn you back to me." And we say, "No." And God says, "I will let you go into captivity. I will let you go, and it's not just a punishment, but it's a way for me to woo you back to your first love in the wilderness, in the hard times, so that you can come and see me." And we turned our back. And then God says, "Okay, I will send you my son. I will send you Jesus. And he will be with you. And he will show you something you haven't seen since the beginning, how to live a perfect life with no sin, and how to honor God and be in relationship, how to forgive and show grace." He comes to a woman at a well and says, "Repent, for the kingdom is near." He meets a man filled with demons, and he releases them. He sees a woman condemned and says to her, "Go and sin no more." But before he gets to that, he says, "Where are the people condemning you? If they're not here, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." He doesn't add at the end of that, "But if you sin again, now I'm really going to condemn you." It's just, "Go and sin no more." And then ultimately, we put our wrath on Jesus, and he dies in our place, so that God and us can be in reunion together. We were made for relationship from the beginning of time. We are most whole when we are in right relationship. There's this theologian doctor. His name is L. Gregory Jones. He wrote a very big, long theological paper. I wrote, read one chapter out of it because I heard this quote, and then I had to go find the context of the quote. Did not read the whole paper. The deepest truth about ourselves is neither that we are self-sufficient nor that we are weak, needy, and frail. It's that we are created for communion with God. Created for communion with God and with one another and with the whole of creation. We need God and others both to discover who we are and whose we are. We were made for this. We were made for perfect relationships where these type of things don't happen. We were made to be in a relationship with a perfect spouse. We were made to be children of perfect parents. We were made to raise children that were perfect. I'm sorry, Mom. I'm sorry, Dad. The thing is, when our world broke, it broke in who we are. The way to repair these is through forgiveness. God has shown us the first example. Forgiveness lays the basic foundation of any continuing relationship. Because all of those reactions I talked about earlier, denial, burying, control, bitterness, anger, replaying in our head, revenge, all of those are our attempts to protect ourselves. Hurt people hurt people. James 3, verse 2, we all stumble in many ways. If anyone is without fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. That's a very gracious way of saying it, James. When I stumble, I hurt people who are coming to my church looking for healing themselves. That person only ever hurt was because they were controlling and needing to protect themselves from past hurts. My need to forgive her was more for me than for her. But it was because I stumbled too. The people in our lives, our moms, our dads, our coworkers, our boyfriends, our girlfriends, our fiancés, our husbands, our wives, the people that matter to us and the people we come in contact with, all of us are fighting a hard battle, and the struggle is real. I don't know the struggles and the things that you are carrying, the heavy load that is weighing you down. Forgiveness is the only way for that to be healed. Forgiveness is the only way to move on because we were made for relationships. And forgiveness is the key to relationships. Forgiveness is the key to healing. It's even the key to community. Forgiveness on a daily basis is how we live. Forgiveness is how we, as North Grenville Community Church, go on and live and love like Jesus. In the story of the prodigal son, you might be in a place, why did I call it that? In the story of the generous, loving father, you might be the wayward son right now. You might be far from God, and you are interested in coming to church because hell is scary and you need fire insurance. And God will lavishly chase you, and any step towards him, he will come and hug you and woo you into the kingdom. That might be where you are today. You might be the elder son going, I've grown up in the church, I know the rules, and I have a hard time with insert sin. It's easy to look on. Wherever we are, God is calling us. God is wooing us and calling us to take on the role of the Father in our everyday lives. Which comes back to my original question. Forgiveness is not my default setting. So how do I do that? How do I choose to not just go through the motions of a parent saying, now what do you say? Now what do you say back? When inside I'm seething and I want to punch them in the nose. I would never actually punch them in the nose. I don't think I would ever actually punch them in the nose. The first place to start, for me, This is how I've been learning how to forgive. Is remembering what Jesus did for me. what he has already done and how he's already forgiving me. For me, sometimes it's not necessarily going and retelling myself the story, but the way I remember what Jesus has done is my daily time with God. My daily moments that I take to be quiet and still with Jesus. Even a couple of weeks ago at the yard sale, nobody sinned in any ways, and I wasn't angry at one, but that week I just had put more on my plate and I had stolen those quiet times from God, that by the end of the day, I was hangry. And I was just a little salty. And if I offended anybody, I apologize. And maybe nobody else would have noticed it, but I noticed it by the time I sat down with my friend and said, Susie, I'm a mean person some days, and I just need Jesus to forgive me, and this is my confession. And she was very gracious and said, Jesus still loves you. So even when we know what God's done, sometimes we need to remember what Jesus done. And that song, I Need You, Every Hour I Need You, that's the one that I go to. That's one of those anchors that reminds me to remember what Jesus has already done. It's easy to forgive others when I look closely at what's in my life and go, okay, this bag's heavy, but the one of my own sin was even heavier. I can forgive this load because God's already forgiven my dump truck. Sometimes the next thing that we need to do is make a choice. If we ever want to feel like we're going to forgive somebody, we're going to be waiting a long time. Feelings aren't what gets us to forgiveness. It's a choice. And sometimes the feelings are the back of the caboose on the decision train. They'll take a while to get there. We can forgive before it feels like we've forgiven. And even reminding ourselves, forgiveness is real. I've already done this. My emotions just need to catch up. And on that, this is kind of a slide rabbit trail. The whole idea that we need to forgive and forget is a lie. It's not in scripture, because if we needed to just forget, we wouldn't need to forgive because we wouldn't remember in the first place. God does say he separates our sins east to the west. He says, I remember them no more, but it's more in the, like, I treat you as if they're not there. Because he'll say that, and then he'll be, remember when you betrayed me here, 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 and here? I forgive you. So he can't list what he's forgotten if he's forgotten, and then we're going to get into a whole set of issues there. Forgiveness doesn't mean forgetting. Forgiveness also is different than reconciliation or putting them in the same place of trust. A spouse who has cheated on you or a spouse that has been abusive doesn't mean they necessarily get to come right back to the same place, because that's not giving them the boundaries that help them heal. We're just talking today about your need to be cultivating forgiveness in you. We need to remember what Christ has already done for us. We need to make a choice. We need to cultivate forgiveness. And I think of this in two ways. It starts with a habit. If forgiveness is kind of like working out a muscle, we don't wait till somebody's given us this type of hurt, that's this huge betrayal, that's a temp, like we wait to forgive. We start with the, they didn't call me to tell me they were going to be an hour late. They missed up my name. I told them 3 times to do the dishes, and they haven't. That was not meant to be a personal family reflection. I apologize. When we start forgiving in the small little things, they didn't do this again. When we forgive in the little things, we are creating an atmosphere in our lives to forgive when the big things happen. Martin Luther King Jr. says it this way, forgiveness is not an occasional act. It is a permanent attitude. And the last thing that works for me is praying for that person. Praying blessing on them. And that's how I ended up forgiving the person in my church, because I had verbally said it, I had made a choice, and it took a while for the rest of me to catch up. And it started with me praying for them. And it wasn't always easy. Because you know what? I wanted to do some Old Testament praying, some Psalms. God, smite them. Smote them. Let them be smoted. I wanted to pray that. Have you heard that country song? I listened to it this morning just because I went to church. It's this guy who's broken up with his girlfriend. It's called I can't even remember what it's called. Anyway, he's like, I listened to the preacher, and he said to pray, and so I pray for you. I pray that your brakes go out when you're going down a hill. I pray a pot falls on your head. I pray that you everybody forgets your birthday. I pray that none of your dreams come true. That is not the type of praying I'm talking about. I wanted to be very clear. That's not the praying I'm talking about. Was it something I said? Okay, on that I will go really quick. Maybe we need to start there. God, this is how I feel about this person, and I really don't want them to be there, but that's not how you see them, God. Help me to start seeing them the way you see them. And the pastor that when I was attending at the Presbyterian, his name's Dr. Tim Archibald, he had that. He had somebody he disliked strongly, and his advisor, one of his colleagues said, pray about them for the next 30 days, every morning. The person's like, I don't want to think about that person every morning. I don't. And he, as a pastor, he confessed, he's like, I was a long way from wanting to forgive them. But I did it. And it wasn't always easy. But at the end of the 30 days, I was in a lot better place than when I started. And God was having the victory. Forgiveness. It is our relational hope. It is the only thing that brings us back to union. Father, forgive my sin, forgive my debt, forgive all the things I do, just as I am choosing to forgive those who harm me. I just forgive them of the relationship debt that I've held onto, the anger that I've let simmer, the hurt that I've been kind of petting just to be revengeful. God, please, I choose forgiveness today. I hope that is your prayer. And that's where we're going to leave it. I'm going to invite the worship team to come up. As they sing, maybe you need to have a prayer like that with God. There is so much more about forgiveness. This was just the first sliver of it. But I pray that God brings healing to your life through the act of forgiving.